people in Iraq's Baghdad and Yemen's Sa'adah mark the first anniversary of the U.S.'s assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. The leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement says General Soleimani and Mohandas were assassinated because they spearheaded the campaign against U.S. hegemony. The British Prime Minister says tougher lockdown restrictions are probably on the way as COVID-19 cases in Britain are at record levels. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, people in several countries have marked the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. Iraqis filled the streets of the capital Baghdad to mourn the martyrdom of the two anti-terror commanders. They call for the expulsion of U.S. forces from Iraq. The head of the Badr organization, Hadi al-Amiri, addressed the crowd. He said the Iraqi people are the rightful owners of their country, not the United States. Amiri also stressed the necessity to avenge the killing of Soleimani and Mohandas. And in Yemen, people took to the streets of the northern city of Sa'adah, demanding those behind the assassination to be brought to justice. Similar rallies also took place in other countries, including India and Canada. The leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement says the U.S. assassinated anti-terror commanders Soleimani and Mohandas because they spearheaded the campaign against U.S. hegemony.
Hajj. The great general Hajj Qasem Soleimani, peace be upon him, the great fighter also, Abu Mahdi Mohandas, they were killed by the Americans in as two main commanders of this nation, as sons of this nation, as free men of this nation, in this battle, this united battle of this nation.
Abdul Malik al-Houthi was speaking on the first anniversary of the assassination of General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. He also spoke about the Saudi-led aggression against Yemen. Al-Houthi said the kingdom is fighting U.S. and Israel's wars. He also lashed out at the Arab countries that have normalized relations with Israel. Al-Houthi said the ruling elite in the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, Morocco, and Saudi Arabia represent the axis of treachery in the Muslim nation. The Ansar Allah leader said the U.S. and Israel seek to fuel the flames of sectarian strife among Muslim nations and to mobilize Takfiri terrorists. Let's cross over to Toronto, joined by author and journalist Eric Wahlberg. Eric, thanks so much for being with us. I've just talked about the remarks made by the Houthi leader in Yemen today, basically talking about how the U.S. and Israel, they are working together just to create sectarianism and chaos in this region. Your take.
Well, yes, that's absolutely true. The U.S. is fighting the Saudis' war, and it's also Israel's in the sense that Israel wants hegemony through the entire Middle East. Houthis stand in the way and Iran stands in the way. So that's why it's got to create this chaos. It's pure, hardcore power politics that's at play here. And it really has nothing to do with peace or with any kind of sensible alignment within the Middle East.
What took place a year ago today, as far as the U.S. terrorist attack against General Soleimani and his companions? After that, we saw people come out in mass across the region. And since that time, we have seen various demonstration, commemorations, and even today in Iraq itself, many people have come out once again demanding that the U.S. leave the region. How likely is it that what the United States did a year ago actually has backfired on them, and really now more than ever, more and more people of the region are united in making sure that the U.S., U.S. troops leave this region?
Well, I wouldn't say that the whole region is really united yet. It's because it's the powerful forces there of militarily are Israel and the United States, and they are ensuring that people in groups keep divided. Unfortunately, there isn't that unity. But the assassination of Soleimani, it does represent a symbol for people in the region to look to for inspiration, that the good forces, they are under attack, and they must be protected, and they must be encouraged to keep moving forward. So while we're at a very low point here in terms of power, of physical power, I think that at a symbolic level, we are winning the war, and what is necessary is for the Houthi and for Iran to stay the course and to keep fighting the imperial monster, because if you don't do this, the entire region will become an Israeli camp where it can force its desires and it keep expanding at will. So when faced with that kind of enemy, it is absolutely important to keep focused and to keep resilient and forceful in fighting this monster.
Now, Eric, it seems that there is a type of, if we want to say white supremacy, we want to say just hegemonic perspective, that we saw this terrorist attack take place. We saw Donald Trump and that administration basically admit to doing it. But we did not see Western officials, whether we're talking about Europeans or we're talking about Americans themselves, actually demanding that the murderers, those responsible for this terrorist act, pay a price. It's as if the lives of people in this region is not worthy of any attention, whereas we know that had the situation been reversed, had an American general been killed by a foreign force on another country's soil, that basically the United States would have wanted to have declared war against that entity.
Yeah, your comparison really just emphasizes that the U.S. is a special case, that you can't really compare it. I mean, that's what the U.S. likes to believe. And that is the case, as long as it has such military force, far many times more than any other country, it really does call the shots. And that's the case with Europe following it. Europe is part of the U.S. Camp. And unfortunately, Iran is victimized and will be victimized until there is a more sensible leadership in Washington, and that's what we're expecting to happen within the next few weeks.
Okay.
And Iran will then have an important role to play in creating a new Middle East.
All right, and of course that leadership also did not, if we're talking about Biden, we know that also he really did not condemn the assassination. He just thought the timing probably was off. On that note, appreciate you being with us out of Toronto. Eric Wahlberg, author and journalists. Well, Iran's embassy in Yemen has held a ceremony to commemorate the first assassination anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. A number of Yemeni officials attended the event to pay tribute to the top commander. Our correspondent in Sana'a Abdul Latif al-Washali brings us more.
The embassy of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Sana'a held an event to mark the first anniversary of the martyrdom of General Soleimani and the presence of the Iranian ambassador, along with some state officials.
Undoubtedly, the Islamic world lost two great leaders, the two martyrs Soleimani and Abu Muhandis, and we are in Sana'a today to remember them. We lost a lot with their death, but their goals and ideals remain among us, and we'll work in the axis of resistance to achieve them.
The attendees confirmed that the assassination united Muslims more in confronting America and revealed the significance of what General Soleimani did in the face of the U.S.
The Arab and Islamic nation lost two leaders. General Soleimani, as everyone knows, was a man who fought on all fronts of resistance in Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and Iraq. He offered to the Palestinian cause what no other leader offered and sacrificed his soul for this nation.
For more than two decades, General Soleimani had the upper hand in supporting the Palestinian resistance forces against the Israeli occupation, and he also had a prominent role in defending Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. From Sana'a to Tehran, Muslims confirmed the victory of the martyrs of the resistance headed by General Soleimani. They say the response to his assassination will be the expulsion of America from the region. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
In Indian-controlled Kashmir, civil society groups have organized conferences in different parts of the Muslim-majority region to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of Iran's top military commander, Qasem Soleimani. Our correspondent, Shahan Abad, brings us more.
Over the past 1 week, people in Indian-administered Kashmir have been holding ceremonies to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of who they refer to as the new face of resistance in the Muslim world. Qasem Soleimani, Iran's top military commander, who was assassinated last year by the United States in Iraq. After New Delhi stripped Kashmir of its autonomous status in August 2019, public rallies and gatherings were prohibited in the region, and later the COVID-19 pandemic halted all public activities there. But braving all odds, people have held indoor ceremonies to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the fearless general. Men, women, and children have gathered in groups to hear more about General Qasem Soleimani's school of thought.
Shahid Qasem Soleimani.
We as Muslims are one nation, and men of this stature unite us further. We will mark this day each year so that our children will know about this great man and his fearless approach towards those who believe in the division.
Islam is the most peace-loving religion, and men like him teach us not to live under separation and oppression, and there is no boundary when it comes to Muslim brotherhood.
Earlier on Friday, scores of people gathered after Friday prayers and chanted slogans against the United States and Israel. Muslims in Kashmir denounce and oppose Western supremacy and forceful occupation of the Muslim lands.
The killing of General Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. proves how much they feared him and his ideology. They were aware of the fact that this man would unify Muslims against their nefarious activities. They targeted the Muslim community worldwide.
Despite very cold weather, scores of people in Kargil region of Indian-administered Kashmir also held commemoration ceremonies in remembrance of Iran's top military commander.
It is believed that General Qasem Soleimani's outlook for the unification of Muslims and his support for the oppressed was not taken well by the anti-Islamic elements. However, his followers pledged to take forward his mission of unification. Shahan Abad, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Well, Iran's top security official has urged the U.S. to lift its anti-Iran sanctions to rescind its policy of maximum pressure against Tehran. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council described as a failed strategy the pressure campaign launched by President Donald Trump. Ali Shamkhani said the full and definite removal of all sanctions is the only option for Washington to rescind that strategy. Shamkhani stressed that U.S. efforts to magnify its return to the Iran nuclear deal will produce no results. Trump launched its pressure campaign against Iran in 2018 after he withdrew the U.S. from the nuclear deal. The campaign has resulted in numerous rounds of sanctions against Iran. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden has said he will return to the deal. Germany and the UK plan to extend existing lockdown restrictions as coronavirus cases continue to rise in both countries. German Health Minister Jens Spahn says the number of infections are still too high. He says the country must prolong its lockdown restrictions to reduce the cases. Now, the current curbs will remain in place until January the 10th. They came into effect before Christmas, and despite that, the daily cases continue to rise in Germany. On Sunday, the country reported over 10,000 new infections and more than 300 new deaths. The virus has also surged in the UK, prompting the government to consider imposing stricter measures. The British Premier said his country will go ahead with his COVID vaccination program. Daily infections have rapidly increased in Britain after new COVID strains surfaced there last month. Officials say the variant spreads far more quickly. On Saturday, Britain registered more than 57,000 new cases. Now, that was the fifth day in a row that new infections topped 50,000. Crossing over now to the United States, which reports a record of more than 277,000 daily COVID-19 infections, raising its total confirmed cases to nearly 20.4 million. With just under 350,000 deaths, more people have died of the virus in the U.S. than anywhere else in the world. Experts are warning that another 115,000 people could die over the next month. Hospitalizations are also at their highest level, with a record number of patients being admitted into hospitals for the fourth straight day. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention said it has administered over 4 million first doses of COVID-19 vaccines in the country out of over 13 million distributed doses. The figure falls well behind President Donald Trump's promise of 20 million jabs by the end of 2020. And with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The biggest revolution in the world in the closing decades of the 20th century. The Islamic Revolution of Iran. It is the best of times. It is the worst of times. It is the age of wisdom. It is the age of foolishness. It is the spring of belief. It is the winter of disbelief. The initial euphoria of the victory has evaporated. The country is now beset with opposing ideologies. Marxism is in full swing, the best system of political thinking for its supporters. But for millions of others across the world, a horrible nightmare that could undermine the most cherished institution in society, religion. The country has lost its prominent religious thinkers like Ayatollah Motahhari and Ayatollah Beheshti to a wave of terrorist attacks carried out by left-wing armed groups. Meanwhile, a young cleric turns heads. His powerful arguments against Marxism-Leninism showcase his deep knowledge of political philosophy. His name is Mohammad Taghi Mesbah Yazdi. When Ayatollah Khomeini was in exile in the years leading to the victory of the revolution, Mr. Mesbah and other disciples of the Grand Ayatollah were fighting intellectually against Marxism and other radical ideologies that had a veneer of Islam. As the storm of radical ideologies abated in the capital city, the young cleric went back to Qom, home to thousands of religious students. He wrote more than 100 books on a wide range of topics, from Islamic philosophy and ethics to women's rights and human rights to freedom and democracy. He also served 3 terms as a member of the Assembly of Experts, a deliberative body empowered to appoint, supervise, and dismiss the leader of Iran. Meanwhile, Ayatollah Mesbah made overseas trips as a Muslim scholar to different countries such as Syria, Kuwait, Bosnia, Malaysia, Indonesia, Spain, Latin America, and the United States. During all those years, Ayatollah Mesbah sought to build a bridge between the seminary and the university. His long-held ambition was realized through the foundation of a number of academic centers, on top of which the Imam Khomeini Education and Research Institute, founded in 1995. Directed by Ayatollah Mesbah, the institute became a major academic center in Iran for the humanities, with a primary focus on Muslim humanities. In fact, the first efforts to Islamize the humanities were made at the Imam Khomeini Institute. With over 15 departments from history and philosophy to law and sociology to psychology and economics, the Institute was also concerned with how the country could keep peace with the fast-moving scientific and technological developments in the world to its own needs. It invited many scholars from across the world for teaching, exchanging ideas, and academic cooperation, including, among them, Professor Gary Carl Leckenhausen, an American philosopher. The Institute trained hundreds of scholars in different fields of study and became a major platform in the country for thinkers of all stripes to debate and share their ideas. As a Muslim scholar, Islamic culture and civilization was a major concern for Ayatollah Mesbah. Admitting the pros and cons of globalization, he felt the danger of cultural invasion coming from the West to weaken cultural foundations of the nation by replacing the national values and culture with the ultimate goal of making the country dependent again. So the Ayatollah sounded the alarm for the invasion. His main argument was that Western values are not necessary global values. He strongly believed that the 1979 revolution was a nationwide religious strife to safeguard the country's Islamic values and tradition, which were under direct threat during the reign of the pro-Western Shah of Iran. His courage and knowledge to defend Islamic values against a raging torrent of opposing discourses made him a legendary hero for his staunch supporters and a controversial figure for his critics. Gradually, a smear campaign was orchestrated abroad, portraying the Ayatollah as a hardliner to terrify hardliners, a dogmatic figure who advocated violence and seeking martyrdom. Perhaps one of the less known and at the same time most important views held by Ayatollah Mesbah is the one on takfir, an Islamic concept deliberately misused and misinterpreted by the takfiri Wahhabi ideology to excommunicate their enemies as non-believers for their own interests. According to Ayatollah Mesbah, takfir is a term with a metaphorical intellectual connotation, meaning a person excommunicated under certain conditions is intellectually excommunicated and they should be respected as human beings like before. The Ayatollah's argument on takfir, which is built upon his deep knowledge of Islamic teachings, shows the falsity of the takfiri Wahhabi ideology, a major source of chaos and instability in the region over the past decades. If properly promoted, the argument could prevent many who fell for the misinterpretation of takfiriism from joining extremist and terrorist groups that have wreaked havoc on the region and become a global threat. In his memoirs, when he visits Pope John Paul II, Ayatollah Mesbah writes, "I told Pope John Paul II that humanity was suffering from two evils, ideological corruption and moral corruption. Ideological corruption means forgetting God in our daily lives, and moral corruption means the current immorality that prevails in the world. To fight this global plight, Muslim and Christian leaders can play an important role. Their cooperation can alleviate this plight." Ayatollah Muhammad Taghi Mesbah Yazdi is definitely an outstanding figure in the Muslim world. Yet his lifelong efforts as a Muslim scholar and philosopher was meant to help all humanity in a world of confusing ideologies and schools of thought where God is said to be dead and man in exile and abandoned to himself.
Hello, we're going to go get into an extended coverage with respect to last January 3rd, where the U.S. assassinated Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, his companion that was riding with him, Iraq's Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, two elite military minds outside the Baghdad International Airport just past midnight. And now on the one-year anniversary of the two men's martyrdom and their companions, we're going to discuss this shortly here on Press TV with two of our guests. You can see on your screen there. Joining us is Hussein Mousavi, political analyst and commentator from London, and Mr. Joe Quinn, senior editor from SOT, SOTT.net from Paris, Joe and Hussein, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Happy New Year to both of you. Hope you're safe and doing well. I guess we'll start with you, Hussein. Your thoughts on the U.S. assassination of Iran's top military mind, what it did to further U.S. interests, and what it did with respect to security in the region.
Well, yes, thank you for having me, and Happy New Year, and I hope 2021 will look nothing like 2020. Well, here we are. It's 1 year after the assassination of this top commander, Qasem Soleimani. It's very important to reiterate the fact that the pain today is fresher than ever. No one should think anything else. Today, the U.S. should acknowledge that revenge is inevitable. The U.S. should be prosecuted for its actions. This is something out of the question. However, today, let's see the results. It's been 1 year since this top figure was assassinated. Has the resistance access weakened? Has the resistance access stepped back from their goals? Of course, the answer is no. Today, the resistance access is stronger than ever. And when I say stronger than ever, let's look at the region. Let's look at Syria. Today, Daesh is nowhere to be found in Syria. I mean, there's a few pockets here and there. Let's look at Iraq as well. Today, Iraq, we saw masses on the streets, all demanding that the U.S. should be prosecuted for its actions. Let's see today in Lebanon, beside the Israeli entity with Hezbollah. Hezbollah today is stronger than ever. The Israelis think 1,000 times before launching any war against Lebanon as a whole country. Let's look at Yemen, this quagmire for the Saudis, for those behind it, for the U.S., for the U.K. So today, without any doubt, after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, by committing this crime, they created a duty for all freedom seekers across the world. Today, Qasem Soleimani is looked at as a Jawara of the region. He's looked up to. And when I say this, I'm not talking out of rhetoric. I speak to people across the world. And when they read his story, and when they read that he stood against injustice, he stood against tyranny, against oppression, against despotism, and he fought for freedom, for justice, for equality. This means that he is someone exceptional in this region. And today, without any doubt, I can say and in bold that after his assassination, the region has become stronger than ever, simply because they know that this entity, the Zionist entity, those behind it, the US, those who killed Qasem Soleimani, are above the law. They should be at The Hague now. However, people are starting to see the image more clearly. They're saying that people that killed today on Iraqi sovereignty, I mean, they breached the UN Charter. That's a violation of Iraqi sovereignty. They breached international law by his killing. So people are starting to grasp the idea today that those people, as they portray them in the media, because we know there's a media blackout in the Western world, they portray to us through BBC, through CNN, that we have to kill this top person because he's responsible for blah, blah, blah. Today, the people have said their words across the world. I saw a lot of protests and demonstrations across the world. In bold, I would say that they did not achieve their goal by this gruesome killing. Rather, it went the opposite. Today, the people are stronger than ever, and they're all calling for the full expulsion of U.S. troops. And not only that, today we are calling for the eradication of the Israeli entity.
Thank you, Hussein. And Joe Quinn, I'd like to welcome you to this extended conversation here. Joe, if you could, I want you to get into this aspect of the conversation, if you could, please. You know, the legacy that Qasem Soleimani, Mehdi al-Mohandes left behind was a legacy of fighting terrorism in the region, fighting Daesh, to be exact. And the U.S. has the exact opposite legacy. They're attributed with creating the vacuum and turning Iraq and Syria upside down on their heads, where, you know, basically Daesh came to be. A lot of people feel like the U.S. had a direct role in creating the Daesh terrorist group. What can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a matter of record for anybody who's interested in looking at it that America, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and maybe a few others were directly involved in the creation of Daesh, of ISIS, and the so-called Syrian civil war that was designed primarily to stop what Soleimani and people before him had aimed to do. In fact, had aimed to do for quite a long time, was to create a kind of a land bridge between Iran and, you know, through Iraq and Syria, and in that way, you know, spread Iranian influence and hopefully but they hoped anyway to create Iranian hegemony, or Iranian influence, stronger, wide Iranian influence in the entire region, and unseat the Anglo-American kind of Saudi-Israeli powers that are there, you know. So yeah, for sure, and Soleimani was instrumental in defeating that attempt to create chaos. Well, they did create chaos in Syria through their phony civil war, but Soleimani and the various members of the kind of so-called, well, the Axis of Resistance did do a lot to defeat that effort. But I'm not sure after this killing of Soleimani, after his assassination, if the Axis of Resistance is any stronger necessarily. All the things that your other guest mentioned about that is happening today, they were all there really before the assassination of Soleimani, you know. Certainly the Axis of Resistance is probably weaker as a result of the killing of Soleimani and Mohandas, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, I suppose, in a certain sense. It depends who's looking at it and which perspective you're coming from. The danger, I think, one of the unspoken things I think about the assassination of Soleimani, certainly I haven't heard it mentioned anywhere, is that, you know, Soleimani was pushing very far and achieving a lot of success in attempting to, you know, achieve his goals of unseating, you know, Israel, Saudi Arabia, the Americans from their long term kind of hegemony in the Middle East, in that region of the world, in the Middle East. And it was getting quite dangerous. It was getting to the point where Israel, you know, conceivably could have decided that a red line was being crossed for them. And I don't think anybody listening to this is in any doubt about just how crazy the Israelis are, how kind of pathological they are and could be if they feel like they're facing an existential threat. And I think for them, it was getting to the point where they saw Soleimani and the things that he was doing in changing the power dynamics in the Middle East, that was going to become in the near future an existential threat to Israel. And you really, there was the threat that there was the scenario where you could have had a real war primarily between Iran, let's say, or Iran and the Axis of Resistance in Israel. And of course everybody knows that Israel's got nuclear weapons, you know. I don't think anybody would be in any doubt that they would use them if they felt they had to. So it was a very, very dangerous situation, you know. And I think that's actually what Trump, just to speak to the issue of Trump and Trump's, you know, him ordering supposedly the assassination of Soleimani, he said, he was very clear on the night the assassination occurred, that the reason that he ordered that assassination was to stop a war. Now the question is, what war was he saying that he was trying to stop? I personally think that he having his ear to the ground and knowing what way the wind was blowing, was that he was attempting to, at least in his own mind, he was attempting to stop a war ultimately in the near future between Israel, primarily between Israel and Iran, that America would obviously have to be would feel forced to be to get involved in. And Trump certainly is an isolationist, has been an isolationist for, you know, for quite a long time, and through his first administration he's not interested in major wars. He's attempted very repeatedly to remove troops from the various theaters, particularly in the Middle East. He's been stonewalled by the kind of American the US establishment in Washington. But Trump didn't want an all-out fighting war. We'd have to commit hundreds of thousands of troops to some kind of a theater in the Middle East. And I think when he ordered the assassination, you know, right or wrong, you can agree or disagree with him, but he thought that the assassination of Soleimani was a move to actually prevent a war, because he knows, like most people should know, that Israel is a 900-pound gorilla in the Middle East, and it can get up to all sorts of deceptive tactics, has done for many, many years. And if pushed to the wall, they would respond like a rabid dog. And Trump didn't want to see that happen. And I think he saw the assassination of Soleimani as a way to avoid that, prevent that from happening.
Thank you, Joe. And Hussein, I wanted to ask you this. What does the U.S. feel it actually achieved with the assassination of these two military minds? I mean, did they make U.S. Bases any safer, U.S. forces? Are they any safer in the region, especially in Iraq, especially in Syria? Is Iran's influence in the region any less than it was when these two men were alive? It's really important for us to try to understand why Donald Trump ordered this assassination and what he got from it.
Yes, of course. With all respect to your guest, I mean, I agree with a lot of what he's actually said. However, I think he does not understand how resistance works. It's to resist. You know, we are on the other side. We're resisting. So to actually be still there means we are still winning this war. They are trying to eliminate us. They are trying. We know the Zionist state is trying to expand. So by them not expanding means that we are still we are still triumphing. We're not losing anything. And in regards when you said that you don't know how the resistance action has become stronger, in fact you said maybe weaker or still the same. Let's see this whole year what has happened. Let's start, because we know Soleimani is an exceptional figure, and I will say this openly because it's not a secret anymore. He was supporting every single rocket coming out of Gaza. He was the one behind, he was orchestrating, he was making sure that weapons, and I might get in trouble for this, he was making sure that weapons reach the resistance in Gaza. He was making sure that Hezbollah is standing on its feet and that Hezbollah is standing against the Israeli entity. He was making sure that at the beginning stages that the Yemeni Ansarullah movement and the popular defense movement there receive weapons that are well trained, that are well equipped, and that are ready to stand against pretty much the world. We know that Saudi Arabia is supported by the world today. It's not the Yemen versus Saudi Arabia. So if we see, and also Syria, not to forget Syria, where is Daesh today? We don't hear any news of them, and really, you know, they're stuck in a few neighborhoods in Syria. So today, when we want to see if the resistance axis is stronger or not, we basically see these countries, the countries that he supported, that he stood side by side. He was someone that was traveling every week. He was jumping from one plane to another, and that's why, unfortunately, he was assassinated, because there was maybe he was someone that was very brave. He didn't listen to his security advisors, so he was assassinated, and they found that little space where they can assassinate him. With. If we want to see today, where is Hezbollah in Lebanon? Lebanon today is stronger than ever. Israelis are not; they are thinking 1,000 times before launching a war. So Hezbollah is still very strong and firm. In Yemen, we know that they haven't lost any ground. It's the other way around. I know today for a fact from my colleagues in Al Masira channel and those who work beside the Ansarullah movement that Saudi Arabia is begging for a way out. They're stuck in a quagmire and they want to get out, but they want to save face. What about Syria? Syria today, Bashar al-Assad, stronger than ever. Also in Iraq, how is Iraq today? In regards, forget the national politics inside what's going on. Iraq as Hashd al-Shaabi, were they able to dismantle Hashd al-Shaabi? Hashd al-Shaabi was formed 2-3 lines under it by the help and the assistance of Qasem Soleimani. So this is just to clear that out to your guest. No, today the resistance axis is much very stronger. If I want to go back to your question, what has the US achieved from assassinating this top figure? Are their bases safe? No. Are they still thinking of a way they can leave the region without with saving face? Of course, yes. I've spoken to many top officials in Iraq, and they tell me for a fact that today they have a nightmare. This nightmare is the Al-Hashd al-Shaabi, the popular mobilization units. They don't know how to get rid of it. And this is the only reason this establishment was because of Qasem Soleimani. So today the US, after the killing of Qasem Soleimani, and of course Al-Muhandis, I don't want to downgrade anything about him, but today the fact we're talking about Qasem Soleimani, they weren't really able to achieve any goals in regards to, because by them killing him, they thought that they can try to plant some sort of fear within the resistance axis in the general, or that we will fear how we will reply. We saw the reply after a few days on Ain al-Assad, the base, and we know there was a lot of casualties. And until today, if you read today comments coming out of the US, they're thinking after the anniversary, so that they, after 1 year after the killing of Soleimani, that there may be some sort of attack on Donald Trump himself. Donald Trump himself is thinking that I may be killed, I may be someone of our advisors may be attacked. So today, for a fact, that they weren't able to achieve their goals. Achieving goals means that the other side has to back down, or they have to leave their agenda, or they have to maybe put their conditions down on the table.
for a fact, until now, and as I see it and as I read news, the resistance axis is stronger than ever. There was many demonstrations across the world. If you speak to people, they see for a fact today, there are many people that see the US as a hegemonic state, a state that's above law, a state that can do, that can go and do whatever it wants without being prosecuted. So for a fact, the resistance axis is much stronger. The US was unable to achieve anything in this regard.
And these are live images. Thank you, Hussein. And these are live images for our viewers there from the Iranian city of Kerman. That's the resting place of Haj Qasem Soleimani, late Iranian lieutenant general, assassinated by U.S. forces exactly a year ago today. And this is these are live people out there commemorating his martyrdom. He was also born in that town. That's his hometown of Kerman, Iran. Live images there. Joe, to Hossein's yep. point, I think what you're trying to say, and I don't think you guys are actually off too far off cue. You guys are basically saying the same thing. I think what you're trying to say is not that the resistance is weaker without Qasem Soleimani. I think what you're trying to say is that, yep. and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that it was stronger with him, that he was an irreparable, you know, replaceable entity, a person, basically, you know, a legend, and the kind of legacy he had, the kind of name he had, the kind of following and admiration he had is very hard to replace. So basically you're saying, however strong the resistance is today in the region, it was just that much better with Soleimani on board. Correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was saying. I thought it was would have been obvious even from what your other guest was saying, that what Soleimani was able to achieve, you know, he was, you know, supplying rockets for the resistance in Gaza and in Lebanon with Hezbollah, and he was obviously all of the things that we talked about in terms of the effectiveness of him. Obviously, if you take someone like that away, you can't really say that things are better after he's gone, right? It doesn't seem reasonable to say that things are better. Certainly things haven't backtracked or it's been a disaster because he's gone. Certainly there are people can, to some extent, fill his shoes and what he has achieved maintains, you know, the network is still there.
And could you please answer the same question that I put to Hussein with respect to what did Donald Trump, his administration, his cohorts, his allies feel like they achieved with respect to this assassination? It seems like, you know, American soldiers are not safer off in the region. American bases are not any safer. It seems like U.S. didn't really, I mean, you have a Iraqi parliament, the Iraqi people, they're protesting consistently trying to get U.S. forces off of their soil. I mean, either this thing was a huge misstep, or it wasn't well thought out, or is this maybe what Donald Trump wanted? I mean, it boggles the mind. What was Donald Trump thinking, and how did it benefit him or America, this assassination?
Well, it didn't benefit America, I don't think, except to the extent that, you know, whenever America does something to appease Israel, that benefits America, or certainly it benefits American politicians. And certainly I think that the assassination, I don't think anybody should be in any doubt that the assassination of Soleimani was at the behest of Israel, that Israel was very much involved in the whole operation. And it was a request given for America to take the hit or to be the ones who publicly assassinated him. But certainly Israel is no stranger to assassinations and probably conceived of the entire plan. Trump, I don't think, had any particular interest in assassinating Soleimani himself. He's not interested in you know, expanding, you know, conflicts where American troops have to be deployed, etc. Quite the opposite. So, no, they didn't achieve anything necessarily, except possibly, like I was trying to explain previously, that because of the enthusiasm and the effectiveness of someone like Soleimani and what he was trying to achieve, which has, you know, been a plan for quite a long time, in certain circles, and certainly in more recent years, it's been Iran's goal to create that land bridge across Iraq and Syria and to expand its influence in the Middle East, specifically to, you know, I suppose, to put Israel in its place and to kick the Americans out. But the Americans would be quite happy to leave, I think. A lot of them, if it came down to it, they wouldn't have a problem leaving. The problem is Israel will never be happy for America to leave, or America to divest itself from the region, because, you know, it relies a lot on America in various different ways, being in the Middle East, to prop up Israel and its legitimacy, its so-called legitimacy in the Middle East. And Israel does not want America to leave, And it also, I mean, in the case where America was thinking about leaving under Donald Trump, they'd be very concerned about the axis of resistance and what Soleimani was trying to do. And Israel wanted rid of him, and America achieved, you know, the goal of appeasing Israel, because Israel definitely did feel that, you know, there was an existential threat. And, you know, that may be right or wrong, or you can agree with that or disagree with that, but certainly I think there was an existential threat down the line in not too many years to Israel if Soleimani was able to achieve what he wanted to achieve. And he was gunning for that, I think. And I think there may even have been some resistance to Soleimani's plans in that respect, and the danger that it posed for the entire region within the Iranian government. I mean, Soleimani was a very powerful man. He was perhaps the second most powerful man behind the Ayatollah. And, you know, I mean, let's use a little bit of real politics here. It's not all a wonderful axis of resistance, you know, kind of a dream in a certain sense. There is real politics that goes on, and there was diplomatic channels open during the assassination attempt. I mean, the very morning after, I actually have a quote there from the Rear Admiral Ali Fadavi, the deputy commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, told Iranian state television that the Americans resorted to diplomatic measures the very next morning after the assassination. Fadavi said that Washington asked Tehran to respond in proportion. They said that if you want to get revenge, what did? And of course, we saw Iran did respond by firing the missiles at the bases, and everything was fine. It was all agreed between the two parties. So there's a real politics situation that goes on behind the scenes here, of diplomatic channels and talks between people. And it's much more complicated than many people understand and are even aware, you know what I mean? But that's maybe enough for a story for another day.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. Time has gotten the better. I just want to thank you both for joining us on the program. That was Hossein Moussaoui, political analyst and commentator, joining us from London, and Joe Quinn, senior editor at SOT.net, joining us from Paris. And viewers, that was an extended conversation there on the one-year death anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, Iranian top general assassinated by U.S. forces just outside the Iraqi international airport in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, along with Iraq's political figure, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.